Are you seeking more depth, more meaning, and a place to connect from the heart with fellow coaches and leaders? Then this is the right place. At Awaken Coach Institute, we create community where you can truly belong and show up as your whole self. Welcome to another episode on the Awaken Voices podcast. Today we slow things down a little bit and look at something that often gets overlooked in coaching and leadership, which is actually, you know, like being with another human rather than trying to do things. And we also explore love not as an idea or in value, but actually as a lived experience that shapes how we listen, how we challenge, how we show up. And together with Claire Noman, she's an MCC coach and has extensive experience in supporting leaders and executives with their teams, letting go of performance and relaxing into presence and seeing what becomes possible when we stop thriving and start trusting who we already are. So this is a very gentle, very honest conversation. And yeah, we hope that you really enjoy diving into the depth.
So good to be with you, Claire.
And you too, Christy, to continue our beautiful conversation that we started the other day.
I know. You're one of my pedestal people. I have this very bad habit of putting people on a pedestal. I'm so glad you're a real person too, because you're so lovely.
Please take me off that pedestal. I don't want to be up there. Not
but we love rebels. I loved your term. I think I'm totally stealing it. Everything I'm writing these days is all about being a love rebel. And I think that was your word, right?
Well, maybe it co-created itself out of the conversation that we both had. So,
yeah. I love that juxtaposition that happened between us. So, you know, you might think that rebellion and love are opposites in some way, but they seem so beautifully integrated.
Yeah, and particularly given that society as a whole doesn't talk all that much about love. I mean, I'm seeing more and more of it in my feed these days, but I think that's the algorithms pushing things to me that they know, inverted commas.
The bots of the world, the universe know that you want more love.
I want more of, yes. I'm craving love in this society that does not really talk that much about love, particularly love in the workplace. You know, it's kind of sidelined, it's left at home. It's not something for the business world. And yet, I think the rebellion is, yeah, it really is, because we are all human beings who have that craving for love.
And you're not only an MCC coach, you've been a thought leader in the coaching world for some time. And I feel like at some point you kind of have the right to say, with a little bit of rebellion, what you think, even if it's different from the, you know, the ways of the world or hypercapitalism or the structures of society and how they were built. So what do you think is most close to your heart today to talk about in terms of being a coach and being in the presence of love?
Well, I've just gone off into my own little world now. kind of feeling that love for myself. And something about, yeah, you use the word being, and I know that's what Awaken is all about. So maybe we kind of start there around the being of coaching rather than the doing of coaching. Because that's definitely something that I have grown into over my years as a coach. I do think I was doing coaching, but I didn't know I was doing coaching until now. And I look back and I'm like, oh yeah, that was doing, that wasn't being. And I remember a conversation with a dear, dear MCC friend of mine, Angela, who's now deceased, but she was talking to me about the being of coaching and the, you know, it's about how you show up every minute of the day, not just when you're in the coaching room, but all of the time. And I kind of didn't really get it. I'm, you know, I was putting a coaching hat on, taking the coaching hat off. And I'm not saying I've got that down pat right now. I'm not always loving and I'm not always curious. But there is something about bringing the best of who I am as a coach into every interaction, and then every interaction informs how I coach as well. And so that's reminding me, I was reading a LinkedIn post yesterday. I can't remember his surname, but his first name is Shai, and he was talking about some research that shows if we talk impolitely or rudely to AI, then that kind of transfers into the way that we talk to the people in our lives. And I've definitely noticed that for myself. The one time that I told AI off for plagiarizing, I noticed how much of a mood I was with the human beings around me for the rest of the day. And so I've learned from that very, you might call it an insignificant interaction with AI, not with a human, but it has taught me actually to be polite and to be loving towards AI so that I'm always in that space and don't fall back into rudeness or caustic way of, you know, I was really shouting at this AI for, it was plagiarizing basically, and I was telling it off for plagiarizing. How dare you? But it didn't serve me in my human relationship. So I don't suppose anybody expected us to talk about love for AI today, but that's where my head just went.
Yeah. But I think what you're getting at is that it isn't something that you take off and put back on. And I remember having those experiences in my early days in coaching, and even people who coached me, I could kind of tell. Sometimes it would be in person and we'd have the coaching, and then once the coach was kind of off or doing their own thing, it's like the light went out of their eyes a little bit and they just were. And I can understand that it can be exhausting to be fully, fully, fully present. And we do need sleep and other things. But there's something to be said for your insides matching your outsides more and more, so that you're not putting something on, you're not masking, you're not being something different than yourself in coaching, but that you kind of relax into this really calm, connected self energy it's so much less fatiguing to be yourself all the time, and not that extra 10% of whatever, but something that is sustainable all the time.
Yeah. That word relaxing kind of resonates with me, relaxing into who we are. And, you know, so often, I'm sure you find this too, that I'll be working with a coach who, mental coaching, and so they're trying to show the competencies. But as I say, this is not, as I say to them, coaching is not about making ourselves something other than we already are. It is It is bringing our whole selves to those competencies so that actually we are demonstrating those competencies in our own very unique way. And every coach will have a different way of bringing each of the markers to life. There isn't a set way to do that, although, you know, maybe at the beginning of a coach's journey, it's useful to understand, well, what might that marker look like or sound like? But it is a might. It is, here are some examples. It doesn't mean that this one coach has to use that language, because my language is not their language, is not your language, and it won't sound right coming out of their mouth. But finding the unique strength-based ways for them to operate at that level, but from their full self and their full presence.
I was mentor coaching someone yesterday, and I could tell he was holding himself back a little bit in the session, in the conversation that he had brought for mentor coaching. And there was this misconception that people are supposed to be like Christy when they coach, or, you know, you're supposed to have that same, I tend to think of myself as sort of a warm, soft presence, although not always. And so sometimes people who have trained under me think that, oh, I need to be warm and soft if I want to be in coaching presence. Like, yeah. No, when we sign up for peer coaching as MCCs and we choose our coach, you get to choose the characteristics of the coach that you want. Do you want provocative? Do you want strident? Do you want calm? Do you want nurturing? And you're allowed to be you. And even the competencies themselves will say that. So the person that I was talking to was saying that, you know, he really, if I could have, I would have said this, but yeah. I didn't want to be mean. I thought, well, let's look at competencies 4.4 and 7.5, which I'm so annoyed that I know all the numbers of them. Like, I do not want to know them that well. Let me live free here. But anyway, there are competencies that tell you you're allowed, not allowed, you are, it's part of your job to bring yourself. And that might mean bringing a different perspective to provoke a response. And it might not feel, you know, love is a big, big word. It can be fierce. It can be all kinds of things.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. There's a whole spectrum, isn't there? From something very, very supportive and caring and, you know, maybe the person we're working with is feeling really tender, and so there'll be a different quality of love needed from us at that point compared to the quality of a loving boot, as Blakey and Dane would call it, a kick up the backside, which is just as loving. It's offered with love, but it's much more challenging. So we've got that whole spectrum of ways of showing up with love. And I think some people misconstrue challenge with conflict, but it's not the same thing. Offering a loving challenge is what we are there to do. and it's not going to lead to conflict. Rarely. Well, I can't say it will never.
It could. Yeah, it could.
And maybe that's what's needed. And maybe that might create the breakthrough. And we can't be scared of that. Because that might be where the work is needed to, for that individual to be fully loving of themselves or of their environment or of the people around them. And And something else you said there that connected to the pedestal thing that you said earlier. You know, people think that they have to be like you as they're coaching. And that's why I don't like the pedestal thing. It's like, no, no, please do not bow down to me on a pedestal. I am human like anybody else. I make mistakes like anybody else. And I am me and you are you. And we all bring something different. And I think that also shows up when we're in group learning groups is, you know, if we start our introductions to each other, to ourselves, to the group, and start with our credentials, our qualifications, our years of service, it just creates this imposter syndrome in everybody else, even though every individual is bringing something into that group. And I recognized how much more loving it is to have a different form of introduction into a group so that we don't get those kind of
I mean, we have a very specific way that we do introductions with every one of our cohorts at Awaken, and it's so fascinating to see what happens. I don't think I've ever had anyone not introduce themselves. We have an email called Confidential Introductions, and it starts, "What's okay, what's not okay. You must never use anyone's email outside of this group or share it with anyone." So we set the boundaries there. But then the questions we ask are things like, "When have you felt othered? What's your best skill in times of a crisis?" I mean, there are these very human experiences that we start telling our stories in these introductions, and it can take people aback. And I'm always interested to see how long it will take, because I never go first. I just sit there and wait to see what's going to happen. And it usually takes 3 or 4 days. And then one brave soul will just be like, okay, screw it. I'm going to answer these questions. And they will. And then they just go start rolling from there. And then I'll add my answers in the middle, and our other members of the faculty team will answer. And so then we show up to class on our first day of class. And the first thing we do in every cohort is we talk about a metaphoric image that we share. And so we place ourselves in the image and we talk about where we are, what direction we're facing. Nobody's showing up saying, "I'm the VP of sales for Google," or, you know, what, you know, they could have a really big job, but they are going to be in the same room with a grandma who's retired and just wants to be the best grandma she can be, or whatever it is. And nobody knows or cares. I mean, if it pops up, which it likely will during our coaching triads during the course, we're already people. Together.
Yeah. Human being. That's beautiful.
I'd love to hear what you do and how you bring that being into your.
Yeah. Well, I have a set of questions around what brought you here. What's it like to be here today? What's your way of working in groups? What do we need to know about you that may be triggering for you, if it came up in the coaching sessions? So it's more like some arrival questions to getting people into the space. And recognize, because as soon as one person says, well, what it's like for me in this group is I feel really anxious and I'm nervous about doing a demo and they hear everybody else saying the same thing. So they're all in that same boat, roughly in the same boat. So that seems to work really well to prevent the I shouldn't be here kind of thing. But I've seen also this week, actually, I used a set of 36 questions in a coaching group that I run for UK ICF. And they are written in such, so you pair up and they're just so touching questions, soulful questions. They've been written in a way that they are allowing the two people to go deeper and deeper and deeper into getting to know each other. You spend 45 minutes together and you take it in turns as to who goes first with the, answering the question, but you both answer every question. And then you take it in turns, so there's equality of who goes first and who goes second. I was in a pair myself, and just we knew each other beforehand, and there were some people in the group who had never met, and it worked both ways. It worked so well for the people who'd never met to get to know each other on a much deeper level than you would normally if you were networking. Oh, what do you do? Kind of thing.
Yes.
Is it
the set of questions called 36 Questions to Fall in Love?
I'm not sure whether it says to fall in love at the end of it, but it probably is the same set of questions, because it does say in the instructions you might find that you fall in love with this.
Yes.
And for the benefit of your listeners, when we talk about love, you and me, Christy, we're not talking about Eros love, right? And we're not talking about filial love, but we're talking about this thing called agape love, which is a deep connection with the other person, wanting that other person to be the best that they can be. And you know, that reminds me, I've read a few quotes along these lines recently, but the first time I heard something that really spoke to this, and it was about love between a man and a woman. It was the Bishop of London speaking at the wedding of Prince William and Catherine. And he said words to the effect of, your job as man and wife is to make each other your works of art. And that, I mean, that still sends shivers down my spine. And I really don't think that's just about a married couple. I think that's how we could all show up in life, is to have this sense that I am here to make this other person their own work of art, not my work of art, but a work of art. And yes, I'd quite like other people to do that for me too.
Yeah, I think of it, the agape love, I think of it as like expanding from a core, almost like the ever-expanding universe or something. Like any one of us is the center of it, of the ever-expanding universe, but it's not, we're not God, we're not controlling any of it. but I used to follow a guy named Peter Scazzaro, who I forget if he's, I think he's American. I can't remember anyway, but he was a Christian leader in the church. And he talked about how his love relationship with his wife was the core of the ripple effect. And that has really stayed with me, because I was raised in a narcissistic system, which I think a lot of America is, with hypercapitalism and the rest of it. And So there was this, you need to be seen as very loving to people far away without actually loving yourself and the people near you. And so that had very difficult effects on my marriage. And my coaching journey has been a love journey, starting with it's not only okay to love myself, but that is my primary responsibility as an adult. And then from there, it's in my own home. It's my life partner, my kids, and whether or not you have a life partner in your home, we all have people who are deeply connected to us. And we start with self and then those closest, and it expands out. We build community and we're able to have, it feels like you're just falling into an ocean of love with whoever you meet. Like, whether they know they're lovable or not, you know they are. And So that could be someone from a different country, a different gender, a different whatever it is. But the ocean of love is way bigger than all of us.
Yeah. And wouldn't it be magnificent if we could all show up in that way for each other across the world, regardless of race or gender or sexual orientation or. And I think as coaches, and anybody in the people professions, you know, that is, more and more I'm starting to feel that that is our responsibility, to show up with love for whoever we are meeting.
And especially the parts of ourselves that we don't like. I mean, you were talking about yelling at AI, and it sounded to me like maybe there's a part of yourself that's critiquing the part that wants to yell at AI, right? And so it's even like, where's the love for my ridiculousness and pettiness and wishing I could get past this old lady at the grocery store quicker, and doesn't she have anything to do? Like, we have these, we're so annoying sometimes, and other people are so annoying and aggravating. And so I think a big part of love is contacting and connecting with these parts of ourselves and offering them so much tenderness and compassion and understanding and tolerant. Like, maybe we can't love them yet, maybe we can tolerate them for starters, but it's kind of a progression.
Yeah. I definitely see that as a kind of a spiral progress. You know, we come back to that part of ourselves many, many times and hopefully start loving it just a little bit more each time, or having some compassion or understanding where does that part come from. And chances are it was created when we were little, out of whatever the environment was that we were living in. And so surely we must have compassion with that little girl or little boy who learned certain ways of being to protect herself or himself. And I just last year I came across the work of Richard Schwartz and No Bad Parts, his book, and I was like, oh, this is amazing. So yes, it's kind of helped me to understand the parts work that I've been doing with a therapist, because I do like to understand what are we doing here in therapy? How is this working? It's not parts work though. Is not and love and everything we're talking about here though. It doesn't have an intellect. Your grounding, although there is theory behind it, it feels to me as though, you know, the intellectual part of me, there is definitely a clever girl in me. She does need to read up about some of this stuff, and she also needs to allow the reins be passed over to a different part of me sometimes that is not so logical and linear and rational and intellectual. So I'm kind of learning she's there for a reason. And there are other parts of me who have an equal part to play in who I am and how I show up. And I think in the past, the intellectual part of me has overtaken or been much larger than the loving part of me. And now I'm finding that I'm rebalancing. As I say, I'm not. None of us is ever going to be that perfect work of art. But
Perfection is really not the goal, is it? I mean, it's the North Star. You know if you're going in the right direction. It's not that you're going to graduate. It's not, oh, when I'm 79. But I do love the timelessness of it, because I think sometimes in coaching we think, oh, you can't go back to that little girl because that's in the past. And I'm not so attached to that thought anymore, because we're all in the present all the time and it's eternal. And so it can be so lovely to bring your 89-year-old self together with your 4-year-old self, or whichever ages need to have a chat. And I don't know that that's IFS necessarily, internal family systems or parts, but there's a lot of ways to do parts integration. And I think some of that timeline where I often imagine myself as a really, really old lady, and I can feel the elder soul in myself. And I'm like, ooh, she's going to have such a sense of humor. She's just going to like find this whole human experience so charming and hilarious. And the parts of herself that is like upset that the husband brought home a overripe banana from the grocery store is just, it's just funny. And that's the part of me that can go back and look at the 4-year-old self that, you know, was so terrified or whatever it was, and reimagine, you know, like my trigger today in this moment, I can invite my 89-year-old self to have a perspective that then talks to that little triggered part that still feels like you need to fight to be safe, or fight to have a voice, or fight for whatever it is. And we can all have this little brain huddle or team cluster of like mutual connection and support with so much compassion, I think is the word you use, compassion and connection inside. And it's like we're all these little fractals of the system. Like when I can love the triggered part of me in this moment, I'm not going to be as triggered when you come with your whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, that is the work that we need to do on ourselves as coaches, so that we do not get triggered when we are working with other people. Or might not be about triggering, but it might be simply having gone further ourselves in order to hold that space for the people that we're working with. And, you know, I get really, here's the frustrated part of me coming out now. I get frustrated by coaches who do not have a coach themselves or do not have supervision. Because, you know, how dare you work with somebody else on their stuff if you're not working on your own stuff? So there's a slightly unloving way of
it is a how dare you, though, because if you don't have a coach, if you are a coach and you don't have a coach and a supervisor and whoever the other people are, it almost implies that you're done, that you did graduate, or that you learned it all. And what a sad way to be, that is. But I understand it. I even have compassion for that, because I remember that very clearly. When I first started coaching, it took me years to purchase my first coaching course because I thought I had this voice in my head that said, who do you think you are? You're a total basket case. You have no business telling anyone else how to live their life until you get your own act together. Who the hell are you to be a coach? And so, and then you go into coaching and you learn all these skills, but you're, that imposter syndrome could still be popping up. And so I think, yeah, there does come some maturity where you're allowed to be a messy human with all your power and glory and love and annoyance and
Yeah, exactly.
Weird, whatever.
You know, I also have compassion for the beginner coaches who say, but I can't afford supervision. I'm only just starting out. I'm not earning enough money. And yeah, I get that because I've been there too. And I've been an internal coach who didn't get supervision and look back on it in horror, thinking, how on earth did I hold boundaries and, you know, not, I mean, I probably didn't. I think I got some stuff wrong. It's not about making me wrong, but, you know, I might have taken different choices had I had supervision and a regular supervision and a place to really talk through this person I'm working with and how the relationship is developing and things like that. So I do get it from a financial point of view that it's tricky when people are just starting out. Because there are
part of me that's still really judgy. I think something that's been in the back of my mind as we've been talking is The Stages of Power by Janet Hagberg. I was blogging about it a couple weeks ago. And she walks you through how, like, you might feel powerlessness early in your life because you are, and then maybe you have power by association. You're powerful because you're standing next to your dad or, you know, whatever person makes you feel strong, you're standing next to them. And how women sometimes get stuck there for life. They just are the executive assistant, or they're next to the artist, or they're, you know, not quite living their dream, but they're supporting someone else's dream that's similar. But once they get beyond that stage of power and move into stage three, which is leadership, it's not that enticing to them. Like the success, fulfillment, that's where the men tend to get stuck. They get to success and they're making good money and they're supporting their family or whatever in the system that feels like they've arrived. And they've arrived and they stay there forever. Some of them. Whereas women, when they get to that stage, it's not that enticing to us usually for quite so long. And then we go into the dark night of the ego where, whoa, none of this makes sense. Is this all there is? You have your midlife crisis. And then we move into the stages that you and I are talking about here. Where stage five is like, oh, I get it. It wasn't about success in the first place. But that was fine. And I had to go through that stage. But now it's about love. But it still doesn't feel quite stable. And you move in and out of it. And you still get annoyed. And then the final stage is like, you just are bathing in the ocean of love all the time. Nobody bugs you. And I'm like, no, I'm not there. I'm not there yet. I'm still get very annoyed with people who think success is the pinnacle of things. I want to teach them a lesson. I'm like, okay, something's not integrated there for me yet.
Right? Yeah, I get that. And then also something about, I read another beautifully articulated LinkedIn post the other day, which was like, oh yeah, that's how I'm feeling. This kind of open-heartedness, and yet, oh, it closes quite easily to protect myself because I'm worried about what those people who think about, you know, they have perceptions of what success is, or they would never talk about love. so what are they going to think about me? And then I get kind of closed down for a bit. And so I definitely recognize that, you know, these stages that we go through of, oh, I really want to be more loving and I need to protect my heart.
It's both. And I love Kristen Neff's fierce self-compassion, her imagery, where she has, it's a bear. And so it has the mama bear that's tenderly, you know, so cuddly and holding its baby and very warm and fuzzy and furry and fierce. And boy, do those claws come out if anyone comes. And we're not meant to lose either of those things. We're meant to be fierce lovers in the world. One image that's been coming to mind to me so much lately is I just love being in the presence of people with Down syndrome. You know how, like, sometimes, and I don't think this is across the board, but a lot of people with Down syndrome are just so happy and they hug people a lot. They love to receive hugs, give hugs, and they say, I love you all the time. And people can see, like, okay, that's the way they're wired, and they're much more willing to hug and love and say, I love you. And I'm like, ooh, what if we could all, because I'm a bit, you know, spectrum-y. I'm always, I don't have a real diagnosis or anything, but I'm always above the line when I take the test. And I'm like, I wonder if there's something that like autistic ADHD spectrum-y brain people know about love that we're just like, we're just going to say, I love you a lot. And hug a lot. And by the time we are 89, people are going to give us a break about it. Like, yeah, that, you know, that's what old people do. But why not do it at 53?
Yes, absolutely. Why not? Yeah. And I think there is so much that we don't know about the brain and how different brains are wired, and how I think some, you know, there is evidence that some people with different brain wiring are more telepathic, for example, particularly with their mothers. So, yeah, there's just so much that we don't know. And I'm not, again, that would be an intellectual exercise to start to know, but
let's learn. Let's go down every rabbit trail and learn.
Yeah,
it.
We don't need
it's fun,
to know
though.
Research. We just need to see that person in front of us who wants a hug, or that person in the line at the checkout who hasn't quite got enough money to pay for their shopping, and, you know, help them out. Or, you know, whatever might be the loving thing to do in that instance, we can do those little things. We can leave little bunches of daffodils on our neighbor's front porch in the midst of winter to cheer them up with just a little love note. Actually, somebody said to me yesterday, Claire, you should start writing love letters. Like, oh. Maybe. You know, why don't we write love letters to the people, not only to the people we're closest to, our partners, our spouses, but our children, but to more people? Why do we hold ourselves back from acknowledging this, who they are and how they support us? And, you know, sometimes you'll go on a program and you'll be encouraged to write a letter to somebody who's helped you in the past. And it feels so good to write the letter and to hand that over. And then, of course, it feels so good for the receiver as well to know this stuff about themselves that they didn't know you felt that way until they received.
I just wrote one a couple days ago to someone I found out had died. I didn't know it when I wrote the letter, but I went ahead and sent it to his son. But you never know. He might enjoy knowing that his dad was a loving presence.
Oh, it's beautiful.
You know, and what's striking me as you're talking is on the one hand, you're talking about agape love, which is so incredibly expansive, and you're talking about these tiny moments. You could write a letter or you could place the daffodils. And I've heard you use words awe and wonder before related to love. I wonder, how does that connect to these things you're mentioning?
Yeah, on Monday, I went out into the New Forest, which is the national park where I live, and I went out bluebell spotting with my friend. And we didn't just look, we properly experienced the bluebells. So we, without treading on the bluebells before anybody has a go at me, we sat by trees and just took in the majesty of these bluebells, the vivid colours, the smell, the buzz, the humming of the bees in the background, the tweeting of the song thrush, the sun on our faces, the wind on our cheeks. Just sat there and experienced that. And there was so much awe and wonder in that experience compared to simply walking past bluebells, taking a picture to post on LinkedIn, for example, and, you know, walking on by and not. I mean, yes, that's lovely, but there's something about the, you know, really stopping to appreciate the awe and wonder of nature or of the learning of a little child that they can suddenly do something they couldn't do before, or of their wit, for example. They just make you laugh, and that's awesome that a little child can make you laugh in that way, or the awe and wonder just when you sense things more deeply. And so I, for me personally, I feel that the more of those kinds of experiences I can make for myself, the more love I can feel. Because is it the connection to nature and something bigger than me? I don't know. But I just come out of those experiences feeling so topped up, you know, it's not even re-energized, but there's a different kind of vibration going on in me. And, you know, as I say that out loud, I'm like, oh, there's people over there who've not experienced that or don't do that themselves. They're going to judge me for saying that I have this vibration in my body.
But I love, you know, you get it again every time you speak of it. And it's almost like you get a little glimmer, and then you are grateful for the glimmer, and then you tell the story of the glimmer. And each time you're just getting to relive that joy more and more fully.
Yeah. So joy, that feels like another connected word to love as well for me. You know, if we can create. And it isn't always about creating joy, because there are moments of joy that just happen if we pay attention to them. And if we, I mean, I do this all the time. I've got my head down getting stuff done, and I miss those glimmers or those tiny little things that might, if I stop for a moment or two or three, I could feel that joy. Rather than kind of rushing on past it and, oh, got to get this finished.
I went on a 9-day silent retreat many years ago. It was just after I had started coaching. It was maybe 2010 or something. And it was a word-free retreat. You could not write in a journal. You could not bring a book. Music had to be without word. It was just word deprivation for 9 days. And it took me about 3 days or 3 or 4 days for the words to stop going 1,000 miles an hour in my own head. But it was maybe on day 4 of the silence that I was lying in the grass with nothing to do, nobody to talk to. And I saw in the grass thousands of little flowers, and they were as exquisitely detailed. They looked like alstroemeria that you might see in a restaurant, or like a really brilliant orchid or iris or something. But they were about 2 to 3 millimeters big. And I was lying on however many thousands of them. And I just sat there watching them. And I'm like, these are being created every single day for the joy of the ants that are walking on them. Like, and I never would have known they were there. Mm-mm. If I hadn't gotten slowed down with nothing to do and tons of silence to just be here. And my whole body, after I experienced it, I don't know how many minutes it was, it seemed like forever. And it's so beautiful to get to share this with you again right now. I just leaped to my feet and lifted my arms up. And it was like my whole body turned into one of those flowers. Like I could just feel the sun. I could feel the earth. I have never felt so beautifully supported and part of everything. And those moments never leave, never leave. You can be 30 years later coaching someone, and the fact that you've had that experience of awe and wonder in the tininess and in your own body will show up somehow in whatever you do. It's like there's these before and after moments, that little whisper of God or whatever you want to call it. It's so real. It's more real than anything else ever. And you connect to it. And that quality can be there no matter what else is going on. And the more we remember and have these conversations where we come to a coach or just any person who's loving and share, this is what silence and awe and wonder that moment was for me. Something expands in all of us.
Yeah. Yeah. And if we could hold that sense of awe and wonder for the person that we're working with, that's going to lead us to more curiosity on their behalf, to help them to understand how very awesome and wondrous they are. Little by little, it might take a while,
yes,
but for them to believe in their own awe and wonder. And
Well, and you talk about this paradox too, because like those moments change us and they grow us and expand us, but not because we're pushing or striving to grow. It's like this pure love and acceptance is what allows this natural evolution to, it just will happen. So that's in going back to your coaching is being, not doing. It's
yeah.
Not like, did you ask the question? Did you not stack your questions and just ask it one time and start with what? And there are skills for sure. But my sense is maybe that in your journey, you might have started from coaching to supervision and maybe something else now. I don't know. Love to hear what's happening with you if you want to go there.
Well, Yes, I don't know what that next stage will be, but I think I'm just getting uber curious about stuff that is more spiritual and more kind of, because I've had a couple of spiritual experiences that just make me curious about, oh, what was that that just happened to me? And how did that happen? But the more I tried to access how did that happen, the more elusive it is. I can't reclaim it. So I know that there is something. I suspect that it is something about kind of the silence that you talked about in your retreat, and giving more, something about more space to simply be rather than to do, but not
it's a challenge. There aren't words for it.
There aren't words, but I can't remember if I told you this last time we spoke, but I have not said this out loud on a podcast before. I have had this person sitting by my side here for some time and kind of guiding me and giving me some, it's not direction, but so one time I decided I wanted to listen to him more. And so I sat with a cup of tea, a pot of tea, and I had a tea ceremony and I invited him to tea, figuratively speaking. And I asked him, what is it? Not why are you here, but what is it that you have to offer me? Slowly, slowly, I started to hear stuff. I mean, it wasn't him who was speaking. It was me who was speaking. I was hearing myself because I had sat quietly with a pot of tea and just listened to myself. And so, there's something about this spiritual, something on the edge of what we understand that has something to offer us, I think, in how we live and how we love. And yeah, he has offered me quite a lot of insight, actually. Well, and yet it's not him, it's me.
It's universal, isn't it? It's. And sometimes we can't find it here right away, but we are surrounded by a cloud of witnesses.
I'm so grateful
for my father. The last conversation that I had with him before he died was really hilarious, actually. He was a physicist and really fascinated by quantum physics and the universe and gravity and the bending of space, the space-time continuum and all of this stuff. And my mom was getting really upset about New Age philosophy and what a bunch of quack this was. Like, they say everything's energy. And then my physics dad was like, everything is energy. And he started going off on his quantum physics. And she got so freaked out because, his way of talking was always so vast. And everything. She ended up slamming the door and walking out and saying, this stuff, is, she just couldn't stay with it. But I'm just so delighted that that was our last conversation, that he was just, his eyes were sparkling as he was talking about, oh yeah, there really is energy. And in fact, something could be like 2 billion light years away and connected instantaneously with a particle here. And I couldn't understand anything he was talking about, but just the fact that somebody knows about the 11 dimensions of the universe and how everything is connected regardless of space and time. And, you know, if you were 2 billion light years away from the Earth and you took a step toward it, you would go however many million years into the future, or, you know, it's like it's all happening at once. And so I think there's part of us, and thank you for sharing about your guide. There's part of us that's connected to the eternal. Yeah. When we're silent in this exact moment.
Yeah.
You know, with Mary Oliver poem, looking at this exact caterpillar or this exact grasshopper on this exact blade of grass, it's that unique, this exact human that's sitting in front of you in coaching or supervision.
Yeah.
Is so beautiful.
Yeah. And that reminds me of a beautiful Japanese expression. I think it's ishi-i, ishi-go, which is this moment in time will never, ever happen again.
Oh.
And therefore, to be totally present in this moment with this person, their uniqueness, which is not like the uniqueness of any other human being. And so the coaching we co-create together is going to be, it's never going to be replicated, because that moment and that person is not the same as the next moment that we are in coaching with someone else.
I'm feeling it with you right now in this moment that you and I have together. What a joy. We've never even hugged. We've never seen each other in person. It's going to happen. But
one
imagine
day.
Two loving hearts in different countries are able to experience this glory and awe.
Yeah. And to be kind of more honest, not more honest, but to be honest about what's going on for us, this period of learning for each of us. Well, all of us are learning all of the time. But yeah, lovely.
Thank you for this moment, Claire.
And you too.